and this was this. I just hit record. This was the issue about getting the client library outside of, well, one, outside of the old administrative client, but two, really having a redistributable client library. And so, actually, I'll just kick off with this now. So during that meeting, I had actually forgotten that Rick, beyond just developing the Python and JSON clients, had actually done some work in developing a Java-based client, and that's actually in the source tree under incubator. And so I had a good discussion with Rick yesterday about what he's done there. And since Asger has signed up to the FC repo 603 issue, I thought it would be good for us to talk and try to get on the same page as far as what that needs to look like and who's going to work on it. So I'd like to, maybe if we have time, later in today's call, after we get through some of the 3.4 stuff, we can touch on it a little bit, or we can just decide on a time to have a little bigger meeting about it. So getting off to the normal agenda for today, Steve updated me about how things went last week, and it sounds like that this general process we're going to use of kicking off these meetings with the review of the votes, especially that have come in, and making sure that when we get a lot of votes on issues, that they get scoped for. Well, they get adjusted accordingly. So we had a little bit of a back and forth via email last week, but Steve's out this week. Just about how to you know, how to deal with the fact that we don't want scope constantly changing for releases, but we do want to be reacting to when people vote up issues. So I thought it would be a good idea for us to go ahead and look at the votes that have come in. But the fact is we've currently got milestone one scoped, the items for milestone one. And then we can still raise the priority on those issues if we have new issues that have come in with more votes, but just not deal with trying to shove them in the current milestone, but possibly when we get into milestone two, look at whether those make sense to put in there. So I also heard from Steve that there was still the desire expressed last week to get things into, to get a milestone kind of marker into JIRA so we can track the stuff according to milestone. I looked at a couple different approaches for that. First of all, JIRA doesn't have anything built in for that. It doesn't have the concept of subversions. So there are two kind of approaches you can use. One is to create a custom field, which I actually tried out, and it kind of didn't work that well. It's possible to do, but it feels kind of wrong because it's a milestone is a lot like a version, and it's kind of a bucket, and it would be nice to be able to treat those things in the interface the same way as we do normal versions. So I actually went with the other approach, which was to create, now they're not subversions, they're wholly separate versions as far as JIRA is concerned, but created like a version 3.4 milestone one. So if you look at that link on the JIRA or on the agenda page for today, that actually goes to the issues that are scoped for 3.4 milestone one. And the idea here is they're just the issues. If you go to an individual issue, you'll see that the fixed versions are, it's got multiple fixed versions. One is 3.4 indicating by the end of, you know, by the time we actually do the real release of 3.4, think of that as 3.4 final, that this issue is in the big bucket. And then it's also in the smaller bucket of 3.4 milestone one. So that's the approach, unless I want Steve to validate that, but I thought that would probably be a good first step for us just to get these things in. So what I did last week was just took, as we decided, you know, trying to put the highest priority things in milestone one. So I just did sort of a bulk update of all the issues to throw them into that bucket. So issues that are major or more. So we have some newly submitted issues to take a look at. It looks like, well, I think did you guys actually get all the way through to the current date as of last week? In looking at these issues? Or does anybody remember?
No, I don't. I don't think so. You know, I'm looking through here. Like, I know, I don't think, like, the Extend REST API to provide simple support for tiered storage was mentioned last week, for example.
Okay.
And some of those. So, I don't think we got to many of these.
Okay. Well, that one, let's see, where should we start?
I just picked that one randomly as something that I didn't recognize from being mentioned last week.
Okay. Do you remember if you went in reverse order last week or trying to figure out?
We just went top to bottom, didn't we? So it would be newest.
Oh, okay.
I think we went newest to oldest because that was just the ordering of this of the query.
Okay. So, yeah, I kind of like going oldest to the newest so we don't lose things. So we go in FIFO order. So I think, well, we can probably buzz through some of these that have been outstanding for a little while. So I'm going to start at the very bottom for now. I think we can zip through some of those and probably keep them as is. But I just want to make sure we're not missing anything obvious. So looking at FC repo 527, we have, this was one that I entered a while back. I was just suggesting looser C model to SDEF coupling in the CMA. I think that one relates to some of the stuff that Ben's been thinking about and isn't in scope for 3.4. But this was kind of just more of a placeholder. It wasn't tied down in terms of really a specification yet. So that's why it was kept in the received state. So I suggest we just keep that one as is. We also have FC repo 563 alternative REST API. Is there?
That was mine, and the good ideas from that I've actually feel it should be closed. But the good ideas from it closed with a note that it provided ideas that should be incorporated into the REST API, but not an alternative REST API.
So is there any issue right now that we can say that addresses this? Could we cross it out and say that it's addressed or duplicate of or addressed by... let me see if there's an issue that's appropriate. Is there an issue that's
688
appropriate?
Perhaps.
Okay.
668? Or wait.
688.
688.
REST API completion.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to then go ahead and close it. I'll put that note in there just to be sure, but I'm going to link to that. FC repo 688, just so anybody following the trail will see that. Is it 688?
6 plus 6 8. I pasted it in the chat, the one I meant.
Okay. Okay, I got it there. I was a little user error there. Never mind. Okay. So, going back. Okay, so we had 568 JSON output for RI search. So I think this is still something that's desirable, right? Actually, this question came up when I was talking with Rick. Do we actually have an issue for JSON output for other REST API methods? So anything that outputs XML today?
I don't think so, because I know for some of the stuff we do in ActiveFlow, we basically do JSON conversions specifically to support that
yeah.
use case. So.
That makes sense. Okay, well, as far as this is concerned, I guess there's nothing to me looking at 568, there's nothing that would indicate that it wouldn't be reasonable to try to do for 3.4 if somebody wants to, you know, stand up and do it. Thoughts on that?
Well, the only thing about that is it's one of those things that is almost entirely in Trippy.
Mm-hmm. So it necessitates a Trippy release, at least. This one does. Yeah. Yeah. But that still wouldn't be, that wouldn't bring it to architectural. I mean, it wouldn't create too much risk, right? I mean,
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's something we would. It's just Trippy work.
Okay. So at least I think this can be opened, and then, I don't know. We don't. Yeah, I guess we kind of put things in the 3.4 bucket based on our initial guess as to whether it was reasonable to include in the release. But this one, I mean, I guess my feeling is if somebody wants to do it, why, you know, I don't see why we should preclude that from happening. But, we obviously don't have anybody assigned yet.
Well, I can. I have some stuff kind of along this line, so I could. I could create a branch in Trippy and move those changes over, and then if somebody else wants to look at it and it seems inoffensive, we can pull it over. In some sense, I think some of that work is already done.
Okay, so I'm gonna set you as the assignee for now, and then. Yeah, when the time comes, if it happens, if it can be reviewed for 3.4 and everything, seems like fair game. So I'll change the fixed version to 3.4, but I'm not going to throw it into the milestone 1 bucket. Okay. So that just reminds me, though, does it make sense to go ahead and create an issue for doing the same thing for the rest of the REST API? Any reason to try to avoid that? Or, I mean, because if we could do, like, right now we have format equals XML or format equals HTML, I think, on a lot of the methods. If we had the equivalent with JSON, it seems like it would be nice if people didn't have to do that in on their clients.
I was just dropped and I rejoined now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
have no philosophical objection to that at all.
Okay. So I'm just going to write it as an action for now. REST API. Okay. Just to make sure that's recorded. Okay, going back. Custom DB SQL interface on Fedora objects. So Lodovig has written back to Asghar and I, and I don't think either of us has responded back to him yet.
No.
Didn't we ask for like a jar or something, or the sources or something like that?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. So we do have a source zip. Let's see what the history is on here. src.zip. There is a file attachment.
Yeah, it's less useful than you would think.
That's the one that's not the... Right, it's like the whole copy of the entire source tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we...
And it does have versioning information in there, which is kind of an odd choice, but it's not from an uncontaminated version. It's they checked it out and then we can't. Yeah, it's not from an it's not the entire history of changes from an uncontaminated repository.
Okay, so yeah, we still need the diffs from him then. But you and I, one of us needs to get back to Ludovic's his last message. So we'll keep that one for now because I think we were still in evaluation mode on that.
Having a custom SQL interface, I think we decided that we wanted to. Having it the way Ludovic decided, we didn't weren't so keen on that, as far as I recall.
Yeah. And I guess it's the... Part of the issue too was the maintenance of this. You know, we want to have the plug-in points appropriately set up so people can do this, but then it becomes a question of what comes out of box with Fedora. In other words, what do we maintain versus if somebody wants to do something like this? I'd like to see more than one person using it, you know, before folding it into the stuff that we maintain.
Well, I'm also very, very concerned about performance implications of this work.
Yeah. So in the general case, if it's turned on, but then there's the question of, you know, people should be able to do what they want or make those trade-offs themselves.
Absolutely.
In their installations. So
yeah.
That's what we want to support. But.
Right.
Makes sense. I'm gonna go ahead and keep that one as is until we hear more from Ludovic.
Yeah. I wrote an action for myself to get back to him.
Okay. SCRepo 624. So this was another one of these little placeholders, and it was really to make sure at some point we had some discussion about this. Let's see, Eddie's got a comment here from, 1 minute ago. I'm doubtful the pros could possibly outweigh the cons undertaking this change. Making a change to the info registry is quite a large endeavor. I mean, not only, you know, do we have to ask everybody who's got Fedora installed to touch every object they've got. But we'd have to reapply for a namespace at with NISO, and that's not. It would be pretty hard to justify to them. Well, we had some second thoughts on the naming. So meanwhile, the ideal of consistency is there, but it just doesn't feel like, we've got a really great argument that speaks to putting too much effort into this. Any other thoughts besides that?
Would it not be possible to use both?
Yeah, but then we just have more inconsistency, right? I mean, so now out in the wild, all the code that has to be able to read Fedora objects needs to be able to handle both then. And then we have a mix of objects out there.
Think it's a good consistency argument to make for inconsistency. I do agree that it would be great if we could make the move to FC repo. I mean, that would certainly make sense if we were sort of starting from scratch. But I just don't see a good way to deal with the fact that, InfoFedora's, it's got a strong foothold for a number of reasons, right? So getting rid of that sounds pretty painful for basically every existing Fedora user, and it's only going to be helpful for people who are doing something basically from scratch.
Yeah. Well, and Steve mentioned all the queries that people have written against Fedora would need to change as well.
That's also going to be true for the namespace URIs in 625. That's a significant cost for both of those issues that I'm personally a little I'm unenthusiastic about looking through all of the client scripts that we have lying around to find those queries.
Yeah.
But.
So, yeah. It seems like, to me, like we should close this. I mean, I just, we just don't have, I don't think we have a good argument for doing it that justifies the impact.
That would be one fix then.
Yeah. I guess, Asker, you mentioned that Core. Okay. Mentioned this originally. Do you think he would have any other thoughts on this, or do you think?
No, I don't. He's not right next to me right now, so I can't ask him. But I don't think he would have any second thoughts on that. He felt the renaming. He didn't like the old package naming and so on, but he felt that the renaming and the way we addressed this was not entirely thought through, and he wanted to point out some of the areas that we lacked, for example, these. So I think he would have total understanding of our reasons for not fixing this. I don't think we could just say we won't fix this, we won't fix any other naming. I think we have to take each naming issue in turn.
I guess when if I see the three naming issues that are spread across those two things, I guess the info URI or URN format, actually, I guess seems like the kind of lowest, like highest cost, least benefit. And then as the middle ground, I'm inclined to think that the namespace URIs are, you know, it's more achievable to change those with less external dependencies and just warning people, although things will break in between the versions. And then probably lowest cost will be the schema URL locations.
Yeah.
I don't know, does that sound, what does everybody else think? Does that seem like a...
I think you're right. The cost being probably lowest on the schema URLs, because those are kind of expected to be able to change over time. Namespace URIs typically aren't. So, I mean, one way to deal with that is wait for a natural versioning point for the namespace, and then just use a wholly separate namespace. You know, still use the same local names. So, for example, if we were to version Foxmol, you know, it might, then you might argue that, you know, if you're going to change the namespace, that would be a natural time to do it. However, I guess the way we've done it in the past is when we version Foxmol, we don't really actually version the namespace itself. We just version the schema. Other people, when they make more drastic changes to namespaces and schema, end up versioning them themselves, versioning the whole things. So, like, I think that's done in, it's been done in, like, XHTML or something like that. But there's a precedent for that. I guess it seems like to move to this would change the namespaces would require visiting every object that everybody's got stored out there. If they want to upgrade to that version. So I guess another option is to keep Fedora's ability to understand the old versions of Foxmol intact if we do an upgrade that changes these.
Actually, that's one of our grand challenges. Because hopefully Fedora, as a long-term storage repository, will be able to understand older versions of things without forcing people to do format migrations all the time whenever they want to upgrade the software. So I know we're not there, but this is a kind of a design thing that I would like to promote.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, as a natural path, you could even say that, you know, down the line, you still might actually come around to deprecating those old versions. It's just, you know, the way that we make changes doesn't have to be forcing everybody to switch all in one version. The really old stuff, you know, there's always a cost with maintaining the compatibility with the really old stuff. And it's, you know, just comes to a question how long we do that.
Right. It's just what's reasonable. It'd be nice to be able to put 5 years between forced format migrations. Pick your number of years. but something longer than each version of Fedora, or at least each major version of Fedora.
Yeah.
I think my hope for the way that some of the model-driven service behaviors that we've talked about for version 4, that combined with the folding in of the relationship requirements for content models, or the model-based restrictions on RailsX from Asker's enhanced content models work being pulled in, might suggest that, you know, we could, for version 4, introduce a new namespace URIs for the version 4 analogs to these core relationships, and then maybe have a way to compartmentalize the other stuff into a version 3 library that people can actually opt not to have installed.
Actually, I have a better idea. Sorry. We have discussed the stuff about high-level storage and different storage implementations underneath. I didn't just disconnect, did I?
Nope.
Good. Okay, we have discussed the high-level storage and different storage implementations underneath. That, I feel, would probably be the major revision of FoxML and stuff that we're waiting for. When we're dropping version data streams.
This is Rick. I just dropped off and back on.
Oh, okay.
If we're dropping version data streams and actually making the storage format something that the storage module decides, rather than something that's given by the user. We're going to have a rework of our entire object structure.
Yeah, we certainly could have a significant rework based on the high-level storage stuff. I mean, I don't pretend to know what that's going to consist of, but it's quite likely that it will necessitate a revisioning of the FoxML schema, right?
Yeah, especially if we change the versioning model.
So what I'm hearing is from everybody seems to be that this is something that's desirable. We do want backward compatibility for a period of time, and this is likely a 4.0 issue. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's linked to some of the major things. Each of us linked to one of the major features that we want in the future version of Fedora.
So,
the moderator has disconnected.
But the rest of you are still here?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank goodness it doesn't throw everybody off if the moderator leaves.
Well, that's the great thing about using a service like this instead of having one person initiate a Skype call, right?
Yep.
So it seems to be going through everybody methodically and disconnecting. So I'm back.
Your point about doing the delegation patterns to be able to handle... You're talking about storage, but that sort of, same sort of delegation pattern can be used in lots of places to make your collections last longer between forced migrations. So I think that and the earlier comments about model-driven operation and the extended content models all will conspire to allow us to have longer living objects in Fedora. Back to you, Chris.
Yeah, I'm just writing a comment here. So I opened this and set it for 4.0, and I'm just putting a comment that it's likely to happen alongside the versioning changes and high-level storage changes, which is a natural time for the Foxmul and other schemas to be versioned. Okay. Cool. Going back, let's say, so FC repo 637, create an object that represents the repository itself. Yeah, this has been mentioned in the context of several discussions. Eddie created this, and let's see, the link was to FC repo 636 because of having some hook point for repository-wide policies. So it does seem in order to have something like this, we do need a feature to hang it off of, right? I mean, or a good reason to do it. are there others that we can... Well, first of all, do we have any contention?
Yeah, this is Rick. I got a reason for it, and that's the APIs support different sets of methods and different versions. So you're either forced with releasing an API for each version that you got to go get, or having the API be able to discover when it initially connects to a repository what version it is, and then know which method it can service.
So that's, yeah, and I think that's an idea that has kind of come up before too in the context of this, is which implies that the object that represents the repository is the one that's actually capable of handling the core repository API methods, right? And that's how you're thinking of it, right, Rick?
Well, no, I'm just thinking of having the client side be able to determine, can I do this or not? So, for example, what is it? Get data streams doesn't exist in 3.2, but it's there in 3.3. Do you want to force people to go find two different versions of the REST API client or the API client, whatever it is? Or can they just get one and have the API client be smart enough to know that if I'm in 3.2, I have to go do some different technology if I want to return all the data streams?
Yeah, so the way they do that today, like in Fedora client, is you do a describe repository, and that'll tell you the version that you're working against. And then from there, you can follow whatever, you know,
which is
code
SOAP,
inside your client.
Which is a SOAP call.
No, describe is actually in SOAP and API a light describe repository.
Okay, it's not documented as being there in the current new REST API.
Not in the new REST API. So that's actually another case where this has been mentioned, I think.
Right, so you got to know, do you want to go to APIM or do you want to go to APIA or whatever? I mean, you've got a bunch of different options of things to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're trying to provide a consistent API to the user, then you need to be able to decide based on the version which is the best one to do.
Yeah, so there needs to be some kind of URL that's like the main discovery URL for the repository. And people should be able in their clients to discover what they can do with the repository based on information they get back from that. Well, we can't go back and change history. So, you know, obviously to have compatibility with older versions, clients are going to need to have some code in place to, you know, that knows how things were done in older versions. But if this object that represents the repository, if it was just standard for us to provide some of that basic repository metadata right off this object, then, you know, maybe that solution could play out for a long period of time.
But there's a problem with I would like to go into some details about this.
Mm-hmm.
the other objects, we have a few basic objects that are always there. One of the issues with the points about these is that they should be the same for all repositories. The repository object will not be the same for all repositories by its very definition, except that if it's only a hook for object methods, but it is not. It is going to contain data, which means that if you merge two repositories, one of the repository objects are going to override the other.
So there's an issue of of these things, if they are indeed, if they're using the same PID across repositories, then they should have the same content. So we can't have a, so that means, you know, following that, we can't have a well-known object ID that's intended to be this bootstrap kind of entry point. We have to have something else, maybe, that points to it.
Well, I think this along with some other things did come up in one of our previous discussions where, I mean, you know, it sort of one of the solution paths seemed to be the sort of, okay, so we just introduce another level of indirection again, right? So that there is in fact a true unique to a specific repository object, and that, you know, this, and then the sort of bootstrap object here that we're talking about that might be common across all is basically a pointer to, and so there's, you know, and you can sort of work out the semantics to a point where it is consistent to do so, right? So it's because it is always just a pointer to another object. But I don't know. I mean, you know, we had something like this discussion too with the with our other bootstrap objects, right? I mean, for the C models and so on, because people could go on and rev them, and I mean, in individual repositories, and so
they could, but it's not currently, we're not recommending it, and I certainly wouldn't. I mean, because you get into that issue of expectations, and you know, when people see those base content models, the assumption is that, or the assumption they should feel free to make, is that if they, you know, move things to other repositories, those content model assertions still hold as long as, you know, and that can be true as long as somebody hasn't gone and mucked with the underlying assumptions for that version of Fedora. I mean,
yeah, and if they want to do something different, they add on new children in order to do their own thing. But they don't modify the reserved PID, the item that's a reserved PID.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry. On the same thing on the object representing a repository is that the contract of the PID is that object is supposed to be the same in every repository if it's got the same PID and namespace. So in dynamic service binding or dynamic information binding, you should be able to look up things which are kinds of repository representations or kinds of service representations. Utilize the data that's in them to decide if this is the item that you're looking for.
Okay, so the kinds of link, I'm trying to apply that to the problem that this presents is the fact that if we want an object that represents something unique about this repository, we can't use a fixed content assumption, right? I mean, we do have to have some repository unique information stored. And the desire is to store that in the repository itself. So we need some place to hook off of. And Dan, when you mentioned kinds, I mean, I know you're talking about services, but you know, if we're just talking about content, even data streams about things, then does that, are you suggesting that maybe there's a, you know, we come up with a repository content model, and then if, and then, you know, the discovery process may be that people look for objects that conform to that content model in the repository.
That's correct. Yes. And then they can introspect on that object to decide whether or not that information is the information they're looking for.
You are working under the assumption that there will only be one repository object in a repository. If you're doing the content model thingy, you could have multiple.
You could if you didn't put any constraints in, like artificial constraints in place. And I guess the question is, you know, should we? I mean, is there any reason people might want to have multiple repository objects hanging around?
If they're not actually representing the repository, but more being representations of collections inside this Fedora instance.
So in this context, you know, Eddie mentions or makes reference to what we call repository-wide policies. So in a way, I mean, the intent with this particular feature is really that we've got one big collection which represents the entire repository. So the assumption one would like to make here is that there's one such object.
But the I don't know in this world of virtualization whether that is a good assumption. Just playing out the idea, I think that it would be perfectly reasonable to have several logical repositories within one physical repository instance. When I think about federation, it's the same notion is that if I have other Fedora repositories that are all participating in a federation, it's not the Fedora software, it's the logical repository within the Fedora software.
Right, and I see what you're pointing at, but it does bring forth the problem of defining the boundary, right? Defining the boundary of the repository. So for the purpose of policy enforcement, you know, if you have multiple objects that represent the repository itself, I mean, you'd like to be able to make the assumption that everything stored in this physical or this Fedora repository instance, this installation of Fedora, is the subject of these policies. But if you have multiple repositories defined in this use case, then that it just kind of makes that assumption weird.
The work on, you know, policy enforcement in general is still a work in process. There can be installation policies that are logical, and then there can be policies that apply to things which are in a virtual repository, and policies which are in particular collections or policies on individual objects.
Yeah. So we've got this convenient assumption that a repository is exactly the set of objects that are managed under one Fedora server installation.
Yeah, and that's not going to survive forever.
Yeah, but I mean, either we need to come up with a way of solving it, or we need to continue to make that assumption until the natural time comes to solve it.
Right.
The question in this particular case that I would put to Eddie is that assumption necessary or still useful for the purpose of full repository policy or repository wide.
You got drowned out there for a sec.
Okay. What was that? Is the assumption I was talking about that every object in a Fedora server installation is the set of objects that a repository manages, or that these repository-wide policies apply to, does it continue to be a useful, practical assumption to make for the purpose of policy enforcement, or is there?
I think that is the practical, useful case for now and for certainly the near term. I don't know how far out that extends, but I think that's the working assumption, I think, of, you know, everyone who's using Fedora, right?
Yeah.
I kind of see this as a tension I don't know how to cast it exactly, but, you know, it's sort of the useful, like, I want to get things done with my repository on the one end, and the other as sort of, you know, the sort of more abstract ideal of you know, how things, you know, ought to be. And so if we can either, you know, resolve that tension off the bat, or we can resolve that in such a way that we're not ruling out, you know, the sort of revisiting it at a later date and revising it in such a way that, you know, it makes sense for, you know, these sort of future goals of federated Fedora repositories and so on, that would be great. I mean, but
yeah.
I think, you know, basically every user of Fedora would consider, you know, the definition of the repository to be one and the same with the actual repository instance.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that, and I think we might have gotten a little off track on that. What I was suggesting is a pattern which has been established for about 15 years right now in other stuff, that you do a find, introspect, bind and execute pattern on things. And that's both for services and information. So you can look up the object that describes a repository's anything in an interface. That it's not a good idea for it to be a reserved PID because...
And I think... Yep. I think we're clear on that pattern, though. I mean,
yeah.
I think it seems like, well, maybe just put the question out to the group, but I think the thing about, you know, the types and looking up the type was okay. It was, I think the issue that Asger posed was that immediately raises the question about multiple repository objects, you know, coming across in the discovery process, multiple repository objects. What do you do? And I think the answer for now, the practical answer, is that's an error to have multiple. I mean, we don't have semantics for dealing with that right now.
Go ahead, Asker. Sorry.
It's just a variation of the multiple levels of interaction stuff. But actually, we have a repository name identifier. It's a basic concept of Fedora. Each Fedora repository has a name. If the repository object had a identifier that was based on the repository name, they would hopefully not be. They would hopefully be unique across instances. And given that we specify the repository name in the FCFG, it would mean that the Fedora instance would know which object was the repository object.
So you're
and
saying
could redirect people.
One way to do it is to make sure. Well, and then there's still the issue of what if you have multiple repository objects with the same name in one repository? You still have to resolve it. And I'm just saying, if there is a, if multiple ones come back from this discovery operation, whatever kind of query it is, you've left the client in sort of a an indeterminate state. They can't really.
No, you the all of those objects will belong to a class, a particular content model. And in the design of that, you can specify which piece of metadata in there distinguishes them so that the client can say, oh, I want the thing that describes the client interface, and inside of it there's going to be a version number for that particular, I don't mean a data stream version number, an interface version number. And so the client gets several of these objects back, introspects on them, finds the version number in there that it knows how to interpret the interface for, and then uses that.
And if two such objects come back, or
then they're signing up to a contract. If they sign up to the contract for that version, then use either one of them.
So whatever the selection criteria is, I think a general statement could be maybe that if you have multiple repository objects that apply in such situations, the best the client can do is take the first one or pick one randomly. But we don't have any way to enforce that a person has a single repository object in an instance. It's just the assumption in the wide, probably most cases, at least initially, would be that there's one such object in the repository.
Right, but that's not the general pattern. The general pattern is you better be prepared to get back several, and then the client looks at them and decides.
Well, yeah, it's either the cutting of, I mean, it's either some kind of query where the server's doing the work of cutting down the list to some reasonable set, or the client's doing the work of cutting down the list to some reasonable set. But if the applicable final reasonable set consists of more than one item, we're not saying anything about that.
Right.
You know, the client, I just think the average Joe coming to this is not going to, it would probably be steered in the wrong direction if we were to tell them, well, create as many of these things as you want, or, you know, I would recommend that people try to stick to one and just understand that multiple could come back. So maybe it's too strong to say it's an error if multiple come back, but
It'd be nice if the query would return. It would be very nice if the query could return exactly one, for sure. That most registries, if you look at UDDI or EBXML or any other registry, they do have a query mechanism that will try to get you down to exactly what you're looking for. But you may get more than one thing back in the query, and then you have to handle it from there.
So going back to basics here, Eddie, looking at this issue, you referenced whole object policies. Does the approach sound reasonable to you that we would actually have a content model for a repository? We would define that as a bootstrap, sort of one of the bootstrap objects, and then maybe have an instance of that with a unique PID that represents the repository, the actual data object that represents it.
I'm not sure right now. I'm trying to work it backwards from what I think I'd want to see in the end. You know, I mean, because at the end of it all, I think from the perspective of a user, a developer against the Fedora repository, or someone developing tooling against a repository, I want some consistent way to get the repository object. So I can, you know, so if I'm building, so if I'm building a UI that has to do, you know, that depends on, that draws different elements depending on, you know, what the particular authorized user is or isn't able to do, see, or whatnot. I want a consistent way to be able to build that UI. Uh-huh. So I need some kind of consistent discovery mechanism. I also need, so then I can, you know, hang off, so that I can assume I can follow that trail down to get the relevant policies. I also want potentially, I mean, I've talked about, you know, this, I mean, in this sort of bootstrap object discussion, you know, there's been the notion also of a Fedora object that represents FCFG as well, right? And,
yeah.
I mean, So
actually, the concept.
I'm worried that what we've set up is this thing where, so when someone actually puts together or installs Fedora, we're making it kind of unnecessarily difficult. I mean, because, so then can you even have a bootstrap FCFG object if we're saying the repository object itself depends on you providing a parameter to the FCFG that determines the PID? I mean, you know, like it sounds like you're creating sort of this vicious circle, and we'll never get to, for instance, I forget the issue number for the, you know, installerless Fedora war, if
right,
and we can't even get to creating some of these bootstrap objects because we need user input.
Well, I see three ways to handle it, and there might be more. Is that one way is there are objects in Fedora which have got a PID, but there's no expectation that people don't change the stuff that's in them. We already have an example of that: service deployments. We have another chance, which is a kind of set of reserved objects with services on them. Then that service goes and finds the data that you're looking for. The third thing is to extend and add more verbs to the user interfaces that provide directly the discovery answers that you want to get. That last one I don't particularly like. That's by far the easiest to do. I don't like it because it makes Fedora not particularly extensible or reduces its extensibility. But the other two will work. The one other one we described, of course, is to do a more general discovery and let the client winnow it down.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan personally. I'm thinking of this whole discovery process too. And, you know, if you're a client and you want to just start interacting with the Fedora repository, you need to understand a little bit about it. So you want to be able to go somewhere and get some kind of basic description of like the critical pieces of information you need to continue down the line and discover more about the repository. So to me, like having a common place or even have that be the really the identifying key point of a Fedora repository, much in the same way that services like AtomPub I think work, is you have, you know, the URL that you publish for an AtomPub endpoint is sort of a discovery document. And that gives you enough information to continue on the path to find out where the other endpoints are and things. It seems kind of analogous here that I don't want my clients to have to be, I mean, sure, they can be backward compatible and everything if I want them to be, but I'd love them to be able to just be fairly simple and be able to hit some URL with an HTTP GET and get some kind of structure that they can interpret and then answer some of the basic questions.
You know, it is a can be an attribute of objects to say that this object is intended to be fixed and this other object is intended to be editable, of course, by an authorized person. So having an object that like represents the configuration that is editable by a system administrator but does have reserved PID and is marked as something that does change is perfectly okay.
Well, and the other route that I was kind of going down was if outside of the Fedora object paradigm, if you have a URL in a discovery document hosted anywhere on the web and you can point somebody there, and presumably Fedora would come with this, like if you went to the base URL of a Fedora repository, say that document popped out and it just gave you essentially kind of, this is along the lines of the redirect idea, of just essentially gave you another endpoint to look at, which was the specific, you know, dissemination or data stream in some object that gives you more.
Yeah, you mean a fixed URI with a pre-designated service on it that says, give me the latest.
Yeah. Well,
that'll work. That'll work.
I'm saying a unique URI out on the web, you know, somebody installs Fedora at mycampus.edu and they put it on port 8080/Fedora. That, say that URL, you know, as long as that's the information identifying that repository installation, somebody hits that URL and immediately maybe there's an HTTP redirect. And Fedora is smart enough to, you know, when that URL is hit, it goes in internally and says, okay, well, they need the specific repository object for this repository. And it goes to a specific, you know, an object with a specific PID. And then they can go and read it. So we still have an opportunity to host the information about the repository in a Fedora repository or in a Fedora repository object. But we're not forced into making a, or we're not forced into making the non-fixed content assumption.
Right. So, like, for instance, if I understand what you're describing, Chris, it's like, I mean, so if we, for instance, were to try to do this today, I mean, we could. It seems to me like the place to make that discovery would be like in describe, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, describe could include the PID of the object that represents the repository. It could include the PID of whatever. I mean, like the FCFG object, for instance, or something like that. And so, and those could be, I mean, and so as far as we're concerned, those are things that are, I mean, it could just be like an info Fedora slash and some UUID that gets generated on installation, right? It can be opaque. So, and in that case, and then, I mean, so I'm just following that through. So then so when I want to have repository policies created, you know, I need a specific PID to reference, right? So I need to also rewrite my policies to reflect that UUID. If I want to import someone else's repository policy, because, you know, on the FC user mailing list, someone said, "Oh, this will do exactly what you want. We do this in our repository already. Grab it. I just need to make sure I'm always doing a search and replace for my PID, right?" And you know, so I mean, I can see how it works. I can also see how, you know, you're maybe we're saying by necessity we're forcing our users to do a little bit of some acrobatics to sort of get things to work the way that they want, the way they would sort of expect things to work.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess another way of dealing with it is putting it completely outside the Fedora paradigms of objects and just having something like a beefed up describe document that, you know, comes by default with some, with what's there today. But, you know, alternatively, maybe you can configure Fedora to send out more than that. I just, I guess the only part that I'm slightly uncomfortable with as a user is the whole idea that I get redirected to this unique object that describes this repository. Like, you know, that's something that I wouldn't necessarily expect, but, you know, maybe somebody could explain it to me, like why that's the case. But I'd love to be able to just hit a URL and immediately get some content. But if I'm a HTTP client and I'm hitting a URL and I get a redirect, it's reasonable that I would follow that and not even care.
Or notice that
that thing is, you know, some invented unique UUID-based PID or something. I guess the question of whether the policies need to encode the repository-wide policies need to encode the PID seems to me like an implementation issue. I mean, on one hand, maybe it's necessary for, you know, for the interpreter to work, but it seems like, you know, without knowing how the implementation works, it seems to me like I wouldn't want to have to say something so obvious. I just want to put it in my repository and have it work.
About the repository-wide policies, I would do that with having them as separate objects and using references to the repository object. So the policy in itself does not contain information about the repository identifier, only the reference. But aside from that, we would still need somewhere to store. Fedora would need to be able to read the identifier to the repository object from somewhere, even if it's auto-generated during install and everything. It needs
to be stored somewhere. But
Web XML is not a bad suggestion here.
I mean, I think ultimately Web XML. I mean, if we look at the Fedora as war issue, the whole issue with putting a lot of configuration in Web XML is kind of debunked there. In other words, trying to make sure what we put in Web XML is also fixed as much as possible would be good for easing deployment or easing installation for people, so they don't have to go edit things.
But you can override context parameters in web services. And it's just a parameter that the Fedora service can read. So at least Tomcat can override these, and JBoss, because it's related, can, and I think most all the others have a way of doing it too.
But if it's something that happens as part of the installation, I mean, the fact is, something needs to be persisted somewhere to make this fact discoverable by the Fedora repository. And I would hope that the user doesn't have to do anything in that process. I mean, they can figure it out themselves too, or Fedora can tell them, but ultimately, you know, the less editing of config files, the better.
So I'm still finding myself wandering back to, you know, wandering back to wanting that the standard across all Fedora repositories objects that represents the repository, because I keep wandering back to these cases of wanting to be able to talk about the repository in a way that that I want to be able to write queries, you know, like against a Fedora repository that will return me everything in the repository, and that I can, you know, hook that off something. You know, and similarly, okay, so we're saying maybe with the policy, I mean, you know, the point with the repository, why policy is being hooked off a repository object, was because that then doesn't require people who are writing policies to
to think of a special case of, oh, well, I have to write my policies differently when I'm talking about the repository. I have to use, you know, some kind of opaque reference point rather than, you know, PID in the way I would for any other object or collection in the repository, you know. So I find myself then wandering back to, is there a way we can make a stand-in object that does satisfy the criterion of let's see, representing a particular repository instance, but can in fact be shared across repositories as well. So like if you had some kind of standard repository object that had a dissemination that would do the resolution we're talking about of, so you like you'd still maybe create like your UUID that, you know, truly is the repository, the object that represents the repository, but, you know, there's basically dissemination off our standard PID, whatever our bootstrap PID object, mm-hmm. that will grab that, you know, and grab the actual instance specific information.
Yeah.
That you can still write and do discovery and all this other stuff against a standard PID because, and so, and if that's the case, I mean, so basically if you can wrap the essential stuff into a dissemination service, then we're okay. I'm wondering if we're okay.
I think that's the simplest way to do it.
I think that
Fedora is a mediator. Have an object in there, have a service, a dissemination, and then it's just a matter during the installation process of wiring up the automatically wiring up the thing.
But that does mean, for instance, so that it would be Fedora which would say, make, like in that discussion we were having of, you know, whose responsibility is it to determine the single repository object, you know, the sort of single real instance repository object, that it really is only going to return one, you know, that because it's just
I wonder if it makes sense to have an alias kind of object. I mean, sort of a virtual object defined here, because that's, it seems to be kind of what we're after. I mean, you can manually wire it together to essentially refer to everything of the underlying concrete or the repository specific object. But what you want is a reference point, something, some identifier you can point to that's common for everybody in the world whose meaning is contextual. And it means this repository installation. I'm kind of, the idea is kind of floating around with me is the data, you know, say you have all this extra metadata about the repository, that like the name and things like that, maybe that would be stored in the specific object. But when you refer to the thing that is the repository object, it's some well-known URL or some well-known Fedora PID. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But such an object doesn't actually have to be concretely instantiated. It can just, when Fedora sees such references anywhere, all those can automatically be routed to the specific concrete object.
Right. It doesn't have to be. Go ahead. Ask her.
So it seems what you actually introduced here is symbolic links.
Yeah.
So we could extend that to say that it's not just the repository object that could be symbolically linked. Users should be able to create symbolic link objects as well.
That could be interesting. I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of neat things you could do with that.
But you still have to put something somewhere in order to represent the symbolic link. So,
yeah.
I mean, just looking at the Unix file system, there really is a directory entry. Our equivalent to a directory entry in Fedora is an object, a Foxmal object. So you still will have a concrete object that needs to get asserted, unless, of course, you build this into the API as a one-off virtual object. But
yeah, so
let's just assume that there is a real object asserted with a standardized PID. Of course, it's going to be at the installation's URL with a disseminator that goes hits a second object, which is editable.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of wondering if that I like the idea of persisting it, because then obviously you don't have to build the assumption in code that there's a specific thing that maps to something else.
Right.
And for every one of these cases, you might want to use it. It opens up the possibility of having symlinks in general, which I think could get pretty interesting. I'm sure it'll be misused if we do it, but there are probably some really good uses for it too. I think the idea of persisting an object makes a lot of sense, but that object, in the same way that you create an inode on the file system for a symlink, really all you're persisting is a pointer, and it's a pointer to the other inode that you're really referencing. I mean, and maybe just a couple little tiny bits of metadata, but mostly you're just pointing to something else. So it doesn't have to be a full-blown Fedora object. It could be a, totally. Not only does it not have to have the actual data that, not only is it referencing the data, but what I'm saying is it automatically gets all the data points and all the services that the other object got. So every interaction with it looks like it's that object.
Right. So can we make an action item on this one? I mean, as far as are we wanting to open this at least, or and then have further discussion on sort of the actual how this would get implemented? But
yeah, I think we should go ahead and open it. And
we're all in agreement that we want repository objects in some fashion.
Yeah. Sounds like that's that much at least there's a accord about. So.
Yeah. We can at least reference today's discussion.
Go ahead. Well, I was gonna ask if I could jump our queue for the next discussion, but if you had something on this particular point, if you're still talking about 637.
No, I think that makes sense. Let's get to what's important to be able to wrap this call up for today.
Really hoping we could just quickly touch on 689, because I wanted to at least be able to feedback to Stanford and so on if this was something that was looking like work that should proceed, and if what the likelihood was for it getting in before from the committer's perspective, because it certainly entails API method signature changes. So, is that okay if we jump queue and quickly discuss 8.9?
Yeah.
Fine with me.
Yeah, fine. I'm looking at 6.8.9 now and thinking of it.
I need to drop off the call, but I'll check back in on the notes.
Okay. So, the context for this has always been doing proper transactions for Fedora. We wanted to also, accommodate, having multiple Fedora operations in a single transaction and so on. But this is the much simpler case of, can I do a modify operation and at least be assured that I'm not writing over someone else's changes that I didn't know about, right? So, and it seems like there's a lot of mileage to be gotten out of supporting that case, since there's really no good way to do it right now in Fedora otherwise. I mean, you can, you know, you can query for the last modified date on a data stream yourself, make your changes, and query again before you do a commit and hope that nothing comes in between. But obviously, that's not a very good guarantee.
Can't you do it in with a policy at the moment? You have certain data stream properties exposed to the policy framework, and
that's actually true. You could write a policy, an object-specific policy, temporarily to make the object unusable by any user but some named user.
No, that wasn't what I was getting at. I was getting at. I don't know if the last modified property on a data stream is accessible to the policy framework. But if it is, the policy framework is able to address the incoming call parameters. The suggestion goes, you should provide a date when you're committing your change.
Right.
So you should be able to check those two as a policy.
Well, I mean, my understanding is that the last modified date here is, you know, basically represents what the caller thought the last modified date was. You know what I mean? If something is submitted such that the last modified date does not match the value that is provided, then do something else. So the interesting thing is that, you know, so what the user is providing is not really the last modified date per se, but, you know, a different value to use as a basis of comparison. So I don't know if that would work with the policy evaluation center.
I misunderstood.
Okay.
I didn't consider that you're actually not providing this last modified date at the moment in the committing operations.
Yeah.
Hello. Oh, that was just a beep, so I thought everybody had dropped.
But Eddie, are you saying I would assume that you're going to have to extend the API and say reserve or lock, give it a lease time.
No,
explicitly not. In fact, this is merely, you know, having an additional piece of information so that Fedora can compare that with the last modified date. And if they do not match, throw back an error because the caller has requested that, you know. So it's it truly is, on demand optimistic locking, you know, just kind of like a compare and swap.
Mm-hmm.
This
makes a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, it can be done with last modified date, or it could be done with version of if we had a version number that was incremented.
Yeah, I mean, thinking in the when I was doing some initial design for the high level storage stuff, I ended up picking the last modified date because it's a value that does exist, and it kind of is. It's a value that, you know, so, I mean, the scenario what I was thinking of is if you're able to have a situation where you have multiple Fedora servers operating on the same data, last modified date is something that you can declare as, you know, more or less monotonistically increasing. And it's something that you don't have to maintain a counter or something, you know, each individual. So it makes a lot of sense to use as a reference point for this. you know, so I would agree with the choice of last modified date for this, for the means of doing this optimistic locking.
Yeah, this is pretty this sort of paradigm is used quite a bit in like web applications. I know it was used a lot in early wikis too. And it just gives you a way to you know, without having to implement locks, a way to ensure that you're not stepping right over somebody's change. So seems pretty reasonable. I was just looking up whether an HTTP header could be used for the REST exposure of this, but there's if modified since, but really kind of what the semantic we're after here is if not modified since, right?
Yeah. Certainly more I would look into in this, but I mean, I did want to get some kind of early vetting from the rest of the committers about the about this approach.
I when I think of it now and understanding it, I actually like it. It would solve most people's locking problems, and the rest of these can usually be solved with owner ID, which is a good way of locking an object if everybody respects the contract. Of course, it would imply that the API methods need another parameter, even if it can be null. And I've been working right now on removing the Boolean false from the purge operations now, and I can tell you there are a lot of places where these API methods are used. And that's just in the Fedora code. So I warn you, somebody's not going to like you if you change the API method.
Yeah, usually, I mean, the nice thing with the REST exposure is everything works fine. I mean, you know, you can sort of gracefully add arguments. The SOAP exposure we're going to have more trouble with because actually, you may be able to, if the argument is nillable, it may be set the case that if it's not included, that's assumed by the SOAP libraries that it's nilled.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that one.
Yeah. We can check. So, I mean, it seems like if it's got an impact on the, I think the REST API, it would be okay. If we were just dealing with the REST API, it would be a non-breaking change. But if we're taking into account the SOAP API, then we may want to consider pushing it to a release where we... Well, I guess if we're breaking that... if we're changing that anyway, this might be the logical time to do it, too, a 3.4. Because we are making other changes. I don't know. Ideally, we'd, you know, this isn't... breaking change on that side, but I just feel nervous about if this were the only breaking change for the SOAP API for 3.4, I wouldn't feel like it was justifiable. So
what are right now the other breaking changes that are slated?
Well, we're getting rid of the force parameter, right?
Yeah, that was slated for 3.4, and I've basically done the code and the compilers now. I haven't committed it yet.
So I guess, I mean, that if the parameter is absent, it's going to mean the libraries, people's code that's written to go against any of the methods that include force are going to need to be updated if they're SOAP-based. So we're already... putting people through that for those methods, and I think
we can throw in another.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, in for a penny.
Yeah.
In for a world.
For a pound, right?
If we don't want to break the API, I could remove it so that the SOAP API still takes that parameter just ignores it. So it's just discarded in the SOAP API and never hits the management interface more downwards at all.
Yeah. Do we have any other API changes?
I'm trying to remember. Last week, didn't something come up as sort of? Anyone else from last week remember? I mean, something else came up as a candidate that would be an API change, right? Now I'm just blanking on what it actually was. I seem to remember us having a similar kind of discussion of, well, if there's other changes going on, like maybe this would also be good to include as well.
Let's see, add REST API methods, allow things to be managed content.
Managed content will break stuff.
Well, allowing them to be managed content will.
It was the changing the method names for the.
That's one of my old hobby horses. It's annoying that you can modify a data stream both by reference and value, but you can only create it by reference, because the create data stream or add data stream, it's not add data stream by reference. It's just called add data stream, and it takes a URL.
Okay, so which issue is this?
I have to search for it. Project.
While he's looking, I did have one question. If you're going to be using the last modified date that's being passed in, and somebody sets it a year from now, that object is going to stay locked.
It doesn't lock. It doesn't actually even lock. It's just a comparison.
Well, I mean, you'll get the conflict until that last modified date passes.
In reality, something like that wouldn't happen, because the way somebody would use this capability is, before making a request to make a change, they will have received what that date was and kept whatever that date was in their client. And then they make a change, and with that change, they post what that date was that they initially got. And the server says, okay, does this match the current date of the thing as it was stored, or as it's stored now? And if not, then it will disallow the request.
Gotcha.
If it does, though, that means this thing hasn't changed.
Why use a date then? Okay, you could use a date, but basically you need an identifier.
You need something that changes any time the data stream changes. And the one
such
thing we have...
checksum.
Yeah.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah, so I'm not seeing that one, but it sounds like it was something that was discussed in the context of 3.4 also.
Yeah, Azure, you can't find it.
I found it. I pasted it in the chat. It's 586.
Oh, okay. This wasn't scoped for 3.4 then.
No, but it was. It's been linked to 6.8.6.
Okay, it's required by 6.8.6, which is scoped for 3.4. Okay, well, I'm going to change that to 3.4 real quick. So, just to reduce confusion in the future. Okay, well, given that, you know, the discussion's already happened, and it seems like, you know, if there's enough, I wouldn't want to make a breaking change to these SOAP API methods if it was one of these alone, if you know what I mean. But if there's enough of them, it feels like a natural time to you know, when some pain is felt, it would be good to get it over with in a single release. So going back to optimistic locking, this is just my opinion here, but like to hear others. I'd be okay with that being in 3-4, because we've already got things scoped for 3-4 that will change how those arguments need to be passed.
Again, I'm okay people with it.
Okay.
I'd be happy to have it in 3-4.
People using the REST API won't feel this pain. It's just all those soapy people. okay. So agreement then to go ahead and scope it for 3-4? Sounds like. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's open, and I'm just putting it in the 3-4 bucket right now. I wanted to hit on just a couple items for future discussion before we wrap up today. I think we got through some issues that needed to be that needed some visiting, so that was good. I think as far as the updates go on what's been done, the only activity I remember seeing go through last week was Eddie. You did commit that change to make the
dollar,
so the auth-in thing is now in place, so that's good. So we're making progress on milestone one. It's great.
I've got Steve's Chuzzle stuff for review. It's actually been in my queue for a while, but so he
okay.
Updated that branch. Actually, it's almost been, I think, like 10 days or something. So yeah, that's also been an update, but I haven't had a chance to review it yet.
Any other? Just speak now if anybody's got any quick updates for the week. Otherwise, I'll move on to scheduling stuff.
I worked on it's not scheduled for milestone one. I just wanted to get back into the Fedora code, so I thought I would start with something easy. So I worked on removing force from the API, and it's
cool.
Done. Just had to be committed. It wasn't hard. I just, as I said, needed to get into the code again.
Well, I haven't touched the code in a while. I'm hoping to get some time this week to dig into my milestone one issues. The two things I'd like to schedule, one is, do we still have Kai on the line?
Yes, I'm there.
Okay. So, Kai, this is your to talk about the Fedora CLI work that you've been doing. So Kai and I have been talking a little bit, and I think I mentioned a couple times that Kai's been doing this this development of the this Fedora CLI tool. And so far, he and I have obviously seen it and discussed it a little bit, but we wanted to open up the discussion and talk about it a little bit with the other developers and sort of get people looking at it a little bit. And thinking about how it might work into future versions of Fedora, potentially as an out-of-box thing that could replace some of the existing functionality. This has been, looking at this code's been my first exposure really to Groovy. It's very Java-like, but the link in the agenda points into the source code if you'd like to take a look. But bottom line is we're trying to get this meeting together to get a few people talking about this, but trying to get it a little bit outside the workflow of 3-4 so we can reserve these committer meetings for 3-4 stuff. So I think the times we were thinking about were later this week to have like an hour or maybe a little bit longer discussion, just where Kai would sort of show this off, and then we'd just talk about implications for Fedora a little bit. Any restrictions that anybody has on Thursday or Friday?
Thursday, I've got something. Hold on. I'm trying to do my time conversions here. So I've got something at 6 p.m. and 7:30, which would be noon. So if we're still, if we're doing it like sort of like this slot or even earlier, then I don't have a conflict.
Okay. So that's suggestion then, is that we do it this slot on Friday?
Does that work? Friday, as late as this, is not good for me. Thursday.
Oh, this late isn't good? So what about an hour before, like 10, or, well, just 1 hour before this meeting? Whatever time that translates to.
Wait. I thought we were talking about Thursday. No,
oh, I was saying Thursday or Friday, but you're, sorry, Eddie, your restriction is, it needs to be on Thursday for you?
Yeah, because on Friday I've got something at, what is that, 5:30 p.m., which is 11:30.
Okay. I can do either day, personally. Kai, are you okay with either day?
Yes, either day is fine with me.
Okay, and I can do either this current slot that we're in right now or an hour before or 2 hours before. Well,
I could do whatever on Thursday. I just can't do late Friday.
Okay, well, then let's do Thursday. That gives us sort of a critical mass. We've got, I think, at least four people, and then other folks who maybe can't make those times, we'll record the call. But it sounds like an hour before this slot on Thursday is what we'll plan for. And we can use the high def line to do it. So put that on my calendar. That works for you, Eddie, right?
Yeah, so just so I'm putting it in my calendar as well. So we're set for, is that 10 a.m. New York then?
Yes.
Okay.
Same time as this meeting. Okay.
1 hour before this meeting.
Yeah.
1 hour before this meeting. That would be 4 o'clock in Denmark then.
Yeah, 4 o'clock for us.
Yes, 4 o'clock.
Okay. Great. I'll create that event and talk with you all then. There's one last item, just at least between Asger, myself, and Rick, was talking about the issue of FC Repo 603 on the Fedora client. So we'd like to get some time to talk about that soon. I'm wondering if Asger, if you're, I mean, I guess the main thing is your availability, Asger, to talk about it. Would it be possible? Well, maybe we could just plan on doing, maybe just to keep it simple, right after the meeting on Thursday.
Depends on how long the meeting on Thursday is going to take. If it's a two-hour meeting, I might need a little break just to get something to eat. But if it's just a one-hour meeting, I wouldn't actually need a break even.
Okay. Maybe, I think the Thursday meeting probably isn't over an hour or so. I mean, much over. Does that seem fair, Kai? About an hour?
Yeah, I think it doesn't even take an hour.
Okay. So the last thing is, Rick, are you available on Thursday? Maybe a little bit before 11, around the 10:30 to 11:30 time frame? Okay, I see that Rick is logged in, but I'm not hearing him. Maybe you got mute on there, Rick?
You're not here. Hello?
Oh,
I'm
there
here.
You are. Okay. How does that time work for you?
You mean that the connection is terrible.
Oh.
So.
Okay, how does the... Hopefully you can hear me. How does 10:30... sometime between 10:30 and 11 to start the discussion on Thursday with Asger?
That works.
Okay. Okay, we'll plan that then right after the other meeting. And obviously everybody's invited to both, so the more the merrier. so I'll
get
that.
The latest version of this checked in tonight so you guys can look at it tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, thanks, everybody. This was a long one. I apologize for that, but I think we got some good stuff done. So appreciate the meeting, and we'll talk with you all, many of you at least, on Thursday.
All right,
see ya.
Yeah.
See ya.
Thanks, bye.
The moderator has disconnected.